welcome to episode 439 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is a show where we talk about audio, video, gaming, and more across a lot of different platforms, but mostly Windows.
That is true. Mostly Windows tonight. Oddly, mostly Windows, but I'll get into that actually in the what's going on in our entertainment center. There's a little bit of a sneak preview at that. But we like to start the show with listener feedback, and we got a ton in the last couple of weeks, all sent in to us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. We're not going to read them all. They were almost all, I think all actually, were about my poor or not poor Wi-Fi choices, I suppose. I'm going to rattle these off the top of my head. I know we got one from Joe, and we got one, now I'm blanking. We got a bunch.
We got one from Keith.
Keith, yep. And at least two other people. Maybe if I was looking in my inbox, I'd know for sure. But Richard, let's summarize these. There were a couple of points that you wanted to hit before we just moved on to the news.
Yeah, I mean, I think the general theme of this was, you don't have to run the software. You can use your Ubiquiti Unify access points without the software. Why are you talking about having to run the software? And they're kind of right. But the thing is, if you don't run the control software that you use to set up all the restrictions on your network, then many of those restrictions don't apply. And one of the big ones, and I found this out the hard way, is the guest network. If you set up a guest network that uses a custom login page where you can just set up your own login, you know, like a hotel, and you ask people to just put in a guest password and it lasts for a couple of days, that there's nothing to host that. There's nothing to block that entry if you don't actually have that software running. And unfortunately, the system doesn't work by saying, oh no, this network doesn't exist because there's no security on it, so you can't get in. What it does is it says, oh, there's no security on this network. Hello, everybody.
Yeah. I'm not going to turn those features on anyway. On the last episode, we got that message from Jose, who suggested a different wireless access point from TP-Link. Right. And I said, ooh, I might actually like just get that and get rid of my Ubiquiti because it sounds really good and doesn't require any of this PC running stuff at all. I'm not going to do that just yet because I have the next best scenario.
Uh-oh.
A friend of mine, actually, it's Joe DeStasio that I do Story Players with. We live in the same town. We have the same internet service provider, and he's just been using the Wi-Fi in the Uverse router, and it's not working well for him. And so he asked how mine was doing, and I said, it's working fine, but you should get this TP-Link thing instead. So I'm hoping he's going to buy that, and then he can tell me how well it works for him. And if it works for him, maybe I'll get one then.
Are you having problems with your Unify network?
Nope. No.
So then why replace it? Like, why invest in yet another generation of hardware?
Well, because I don't really like the idea of the always running PC and stuff.
Okay. You know, you're going to be able to use it for stuff like blocking your kids from accessing the internet during certain hours and blocking out certain devices. And there's all kinds of cool stuff that you can do with it.
Hmm. Maybe I need to dig into that more.
You might want to look into that. It's good stuff.
And I need to find out if I could run it all on a Raspberry Pi, I'd probably be okay with that.
You people and your Raspberry Pis.
You love them. Anyway, let's move on. So that's all of our news. Thank you for all of the information about Wi-Fi access points. I had no idea this was going to be that interesting of a topic for everybody. So thank you to everybody who wrote in with suggestions and feedback on the topic. But let's move on to our featured story of the week. And surprise, surprise, it's Plex as the featured story. surprising absolutely nobody. It's Plex. Because they've finally done one of the big things we've been asking for, at least some of the way. We've got live TV in the Plex app on the Xbox One. And some other platforms too, but who cares? We've got it on Xbox One. Richard's like, but what about my Apple TV?
Well, no, I've already had it. And that's the thing that's so crazy is I've kind of forgot that this wasn't available on the Xbox One because I do have it on the Apple TV.
Mm. Okay. Well, then you can compare features here because you're probably a little bit more used to it on the Apple TV. Certainly more used to it than I am since I've never used an Apple TV. So they've added the program guide, and that is the part where it'll show you what's on right now. It'll show you what's coming up. It'll show you posters for like popular shows that are going to be on later tonight, things like that. And you can select them and see other episodes that are going to be on and things like that. That's all there. Live TV absolutely works. So, you know, if you scroll through the things of what's on TV and select one, it works. It works fine. Even the ability to pause and rewind and things like that, that all works. What you can't do is record anything. I don't know why this isn't in there.
It's still not in any of the 10-foot interfaces. None of them do this.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty darn... Can I say damn without the explicit tag? I'm pretty damn sure. I don't say darn, so you know, it just wouldn't be me.
I think Android TV has this.
Really?
But Android TV was the first
schedule
interface to get all of this.
Or record something that is currently playing.
Both, I think. Now you're really making me question. So are you thinking that it's only available on the web? Because you can definitely do all that on the web.
It's available on the web, and it's available on the media, the Plex Media Player. But I don't believe that it is available on the app itself, except if you're looking at live TV and I think some of the apps allow you to record what is playing live now.
Mm, okay. Well, the Xbox doesn't even do that. There is no record anywhere. You can't record the thing that you're watching. You can't set things that are going to be on the air tonight to record. If you try to do that, like if you just go into a show that's supposed to show up or supposed to be on later, it gives you an error message that says playback error, unable to tune channel, not on air.
Right. So why is there even a path to get there? Like, why is there a path to get to an error message at all?
Yeah, it's a little weird. Like, just give us the bar that shows us what's on now if that's all we can actually do anything with. So hopefully they're going to be fixing that really soon, hopefully. But there was another big change, and I think this might actually make Richard and I both happier than just having the live TV functionality, and that is they've finally changed how the server browser works. And by server browser, I mean if you're sharing Plex libraries with friends and stuff like that, you can switch between servers. So Richard and I do this to experiment and check out these features and stuff. And before, you had that idiotic interface where you had to go to the top menu and then press up. Unlike any menu we've ever seen in any app ever created, right? It was so weird, so weird. And when we talked with some people from Plex at CES this year, they said, yeah, a lot of people have complained about this.
Yeah, we've heard
it's
about that.
We're working on. Right. So that's gone. You don't press up on that menu anymore. Now there's just a strip of the different servers that you can access right below that top yellow bar.
Right.
And I think that works well. And the other thing they implemented with it is you can now rearrange the order in which it lists the servers.
I like that. I think that's pretty cool, and particularly for people who have multiple libraries, because I don't think it's accurate to call this a server browser. This is really a library browser, because what it allows you to do is select from the specific video library or photo library or music library or whatever library you want to select from. And you may own those libraries. You may own multiple video libraries. I have, for example, a TV shows library. And then I also have a recordings library, which just happens to be TV shows. So it falls under the TV category. And they both are selectable from them. And somewhat miraculously, I don't quite know how it did this, but it knew that recordings was the first library that I cared about. So that's the one that it shows first. I love that they finally made it appear below the top menu. I don't understand why they changed the design of it. I actually liked the design of the old menu better, where it was, in fact, just another strip of tiles. And I don't know why they couldn't do the same thing, but just have it underneath the current selection. But whatever, I'm glad they fixed it. It's nice. I love that you can tweak the order of things. I think that's very useful because, you know what? If you have, let's say, I don't know, five friends that you're sharing libraries with, hypothetically, I'm just saying hypothetically, if you have five friends that you're sharing with and one of them is the one that you most likely go to because they have the movies you're most interested in or they have the TV shows that you're most interested in, then you might want to, you know, bump that up so that's right after your library. And this gives you that ability.
Right. Yeah, it's great. So hopefully we'll get recording and scheduling of recording and being able to see your schedule and all of that soon. Hopefully we'll be getting that grid guide that they keep talking about.
Oh, soon. Yeah. Let me tell you, Josh, you gave me a little bit of a start today because I looked at the show notes and I saw in here that you wrote down live TV program guide added. And for a minute, I'm like, oh, no. They put a real grid guide in there. No. It's the same old crappy program guide that they have showing you huge posters for every channel for what's on now. It's still as useless as it was before.
It's not as useless when you're a cord cutter and you only have six channels. Yeah, I'm sure for you when you've got 1,000 channels or whatever, that's not very usable at all. But when you've only got six, it's not so bad for seeing what's on right now.
Good point.
But the rest of it's pretty bad. Yeah. All right, so that's our featured news. Let's move into some other video news here. And VLC, this is probably the only video app that is more popular than Plex, right? Everybody's got VLC.
Wait,
everybody uses
more
VLC.
And popular? It's more popular than Plex? Do you think so?
I think so. Everyone in the universe uses VLC. People are only using Plex if they've got like really nice video libraries and stuff like that. But everyone uses VLC to just pop open a quick video or whatever, right?
I think so. One might suggest that that's because you might have acquired that video in illicit ways. I'm just saying. I don't know. If we were to judge based on the number of knockoffs for player apps that exist in the Microsoft Store, then in fact, VLC wins.
It does by a landslide. Well, and VLC used to be way more necessary because, you know, Windows Media Player and then the Movies and TV app just couldn't play back very many formats. But now it can, and that's a lot better. But VLC still has even more functionality if you need subtitles and lots of other things. And VLC will even do conversions and stuff like that. Like, it's a crazy, crazy popular app.
It will also play Blu-ray rips.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable the things that this thing can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they have a brand new major version. For as long as this app has been out, which it's been, I wouldn't be surprised if VLC has been around for more than 10 years. I bet it has been more than 10 years.
Yeah, I think so.
It's now at version 3.0. They don't move all that fast over in video land.
Well, remember, we were pre-1.0 for years and years and years.
That's true. But we've got some pretty nice new features in this new version. There's a ton of them, but here's the big ones. Chromecast. You can now Chromecast from VLC. That's kind of cool and even more useful because VLC runs on a bunch of, you know, it runs on Android, it runs on iOS, right. It runs on basically everything else. So having Chromecast functionality is really nice. If you're running it on Windows 10 and you've got a high DPI screen, it's been kind of miserable to use on that type of display. Not anymore. It finally scales correctly. Oh, wow. Don in the chat, he's on it tonight. VLC launched February 1st, 2001. Holy cow.
17 years old. And we missed its birthday.
I know. We should have said, can you sing happy birthday real quick, Richard?
No.
Okay. I didn't think I'd swing that one past you. All right. So back into the features in the birthday anniversary. Next year, VLC can vote. Anyway, scalable UI, so it actually works correctly on high DPI displays. Here's another big one. 4K and 8K video playback support. 8K maybe not quite so necessary just yet. I don't think we have many 8K displays.
I don't know. You never know cool. How many people are getting those raw red camera files that they want to be able to watch.
Yeah, but on what? You're not going to watch it on an 8K display. So more importantly, it has HDR support now. I kind of just figured that would work. HDR is one of those weird things that I just never quite know.
Like, yeah.
What do I need to really make this work?
You have to explicitly support it everywhere. Yeah. Like, it doesn't just happen.
Right. Apparently, one of the things you need is VLC 3.0. And then over at, I was looking at the article on Therat.com, and they made a really interesting point that I wanted to share. All sorts of new features and stuff like that, but they don't mention anything in their release notes about battery life. You know, a lot of people are watching videos on laptops, on planes, on tablets, things like that. And if you're doing that on Windows 10, the Movies and TV app really gets fantastic battery life for just watching a video. If you just want to full screen a video and chill out on a plane for 4 hours, that works really well. And VLC doesn't work as well. So I'm hoping that someone is going to do like a thorough battery life comparison test between VLC 3.0 and Microsoft's Movies and TV app. I don't want to do that test, but it'd be nice if somebody else would.
And I have to imagine it's not going to be anywhere near as good, right? Because VLC, one of the things that makes VLC so wonderful is that it basically includes all of the necessary codecs internally to be able to transcode whatever it is that you want to watch on the fly.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And that takes processing effort, maybe more so than what the Microsoft TV and Movies and TV. I still hate the name of that app.
Don't worry, it's not going to exist for long. It's going away. Don't worry about it. Are we taking bets for the days that Movies and TV dies?
Microsoft Movies and TV is not dying.
Okay,
but something else is.
Ooh. Very, very good. I couldn't have done that better myself, Josh. Yeah, so Disney Movies Anywhere is something that we've talked about in the past. This is a great way of watching your Disney movies on a number of different platforms. On Vudu, which is one of the applications that's available on Xbox, on Amazon Video, and on others as well. Well, in fact, it used to be Movies and TV until Microsoft canceled that relationship. But that's another story. Or is it? Because what's happening is that Disney Movies Anywhere is closing at the end of the month. And we've also mentioned that there's a new service called Movies Anywhere that is essentially the successor to Disney Movies Anywhere. It's basically Disney, but they've worked with the industry, five different studios, to provide all of their movies across this multi-platform service. So all of the movies that you have on Vudu on these five studios can sync with your account on your Disney account, and can sync with your account on iTunes, and can sync with your account on Google Play, which means that they're available in YouTube, and they can sync on Amazon. So more or less, they're going to appear everywhere, which is really nice. And in many cases, they either take with them or they automatically get updated to 4K if the 4K versions are available on that platform. Great service. We highly recommend it. If you have a stale Disney Movies Anywhere platform, you probably want to go visit it and transfer it to the Movies Anywhere service. And there are instructions right on the login page on how you can do that.
Yep, it's super simple. Definitely go and do that. All right, so let's move on to some audio news. And this is kind of weird. I don't normally get that excited about audio news, but this first audio story, this might have had me more excited than the Plex story.
Wow, that's awesome. Because I looked at this and I was like, huh?
Yeah, this is super awesome. I've been wanting something like this. So Spotify has partnered up with Discord to enable a new way of listening to music with your friends. So we all know what Spotify is. It's the best music streaming service available. I don't care what Richard says. It's the best. And you should subscribe. Even Microsoft thinks you should subscribe. Discord might not be super familiar to people. Discord is a chat service. It's similar to Slack or Microsoft Teams, sort of, if you're used to those types of apps. But it's always been targeted at the gaming community. So one of the main differences between Discord and Slack is you don't have to be part of like a team or a company or whatever it is that Slack calls them. I think they call them teams. You just make a Discord account, and it's sort of like the old days of, you know, like AOL Instant Messenger, where I just got to give you my username or Skype or something like that, and you and I can chat in Discord. But you can also make groups similar to a team in Slack or something like that. And then it also has really good support, and this is where the game side of this comes into play. It has really good support for voice chat, and especially multi-person voice chat. So a lot of people use Discord for PC gaming voice chat when they're playing with their friends, because it works really well. So what they've done is now, if you link your Discord account to your Spotify account, then it will show you, well, there's an option to turn this on. It will show what you're listening to on Spotify in your user profile. And in the little user list of all of your friends, if you're listening to something, it'll have a little icon to signify that, yes, this person is listening to something on Spotify. That's not really that cool. Like, okay, whatever. They can see that I'm listening to something. They might even be, and they can see what I'm listening to. Where this gets really cool is, say, Richard is listening to something that looks interesting. I can click on his profile and join in and listen to the same thing that he's listening to at the same point in the song that he is. And as he switches tracks or works his way through a playlist, my Spotify player will do the same thing. So you can basically say, I don't really know what to listen to. Richard, you've got some really good taste. You know, play, you know, some playlist of yours of all of the music that you're really into right now. And I can check it out that way. And it's basically a way of having curated radio provided by your friends, or a way for you to share what you really like with your friends. It really reminded me of a service, I think it's been gone now for over 5 years, that was called Turntable.fm. Did you ever use that app?
I did not, but I know what you're talking about.
It was awesome. It was basically a website where you would go in, and there were lots of different rooms, and in every room, there were up to five DJs playing tracks, and you could vote for them and all that stuff. This doesn't have that sort of stuff, but it's social music enjoyment. You know, it's listening to things with friends. And Discord already has the ability to talk about it. So I love it. And the fact that it works with Spotify means that I can listen to it on anything. You know, I'm probably using Discord on a PC, but I can use Spotify to play on my Google speakers or my TV and stuff like that, and have it be controlled by essentially by someone else. And I played around with this a lot over the last few days, and I love it. Absolutely love it. Yeah. Don says it's a new avenue for the digital DJ. It absolutely is. The friend that I was testing all of this with, I was like, you know, you could DJ a party at my house from your house. That's kind of neat.
Well,
kind of.
It is. But you kind of need to be in the party to know where to go next. But this is right. So friggin' cool. I love this. So I really didn't understand this when I saw it in the notes. I didn't know what Discord was. And I thought, oh, yay. Okay, so you can listen to music together while you're playing a game. Who cares?
Right.
And maybe that's cool, too. But the broader implications of this, just the household sharing of, oh, what is Josh listening to now? I'd be interested in listening to what Josh is listening to in his house if he's sharing it. That is so freaking cool.
Yeah, it's super cool.
I want this just in the music services themselves. Why aren't they? Why isn't this what Ping did? Like, why, if you're doing a social music thing, why didn't you actually make it work to share the music itself? What's brilliant about this, and this is where Turntable failed, is that this is licensed.
Exactly. Yeah, that was the downfall of Turntable, like letting people just upload any random MP3s to the service. Yeah, that wasn't ever going to work. what I don't understand is, why doesn't Spotify just do this? If you and I are friends on Spotify, why can't I enable this type of feature in Spotify?
Because they haven't acquired Discord yet?
And I don't mean the chatting and stuff. I just want to be able to listen to what other people are listening to.
Right. And so you have to wonder if this isn't like a preliminary test to see if this is going to catch on or not. And if it does, then who knows? Maybe they'll license the IP to make it work just on their service between any two Spotify people. Because in Spotify, you have friends.
Right. Hopefully. So, maybe. Maybe you don't.
Well, yeah.
Maybe you're lonely in Spotify.
Yeah, that's sad.
All right, so that's the Spotify news. Let's move on to some Amazon Music news. This is a feature in the Windows Store. Sorry, God, the Microsoft Store. I really wish they wouldn't have renamed this, because it doesn't make any sense now.
It's terrible.
The Microsoft Store app on your Windows 10 PC. There is a new featured app as of today for Amazon Music. It's coming to the store. That's right. I said coming to the store, even though it's a featured app. Yep. It's not actually here yet.
Not there. Not available. This application is not available.
Nope. Totally not available on anything. You know, I pulled out my Surface Pro where I'm running insider preview builds and stuff. It's somehow not available, but somehow some people have it, because there are like 5 reviews of people who have used it.
I thought it was me. I thought I did something wrong. I thought I had a lame Surface 3. And it said, no, you're not using this on that Atom device. That's just not happening.
Now, I don't know what you would have to do to make this app available to you, but it's not. And I'm sure some people are going to be excited about this. There are definitely big fans of Amazon Music out there. It's a pretty decent service. You get some amount of free music listening just for having an Amazon Prime subscription. Or if you've purchased a bunch of music from Amazon, it all displays in there.
By the way, if you've purchased CDs from Amazon in your prior life, they appear there.
Right. But I don't know that there's really that much to get excited about, because I think all they're doing here is taking their current Windows desktop application and putting it in the store.
Yeah, and it looks a little bit different, a little bit, not much, but a little bit different from that. So I wonder if they've done anything to maybe port it to a more universal, for lack of a better word, platform. But I don't know.
I'm not sure, but I don't think the current app is really all that fantastic. It's fine. It gets right. the job done.
Yeah. But I agree.
It doesn't look super like it would work really well on a tablet.
Oh, funny that you mentioned that, because if you look at the requirements for this application, the minimum requirements are that it has to have an integrated keyboard and mouse, amongst other things like memory and so forth. But it has to have an integrated keyboard and mouse. Do you know what that means? Do you know what that means, Josh? That means it's not designed for touch.
Yeah. So that's Why? Significantly less exciting.
I have an iPad. You know what works really well on my iPad? Oh, Amazon Music.
Hmm.
Apparently, they haven't figured out how to make that same experience on the Windows platform.
Yeah, but if they did, they would probably do it using web technologies, and then you'd be mad about that, too.
Oh, totally.
We're not even going to get into Microsoft's new push for progressive web apps, because that'll just make Richard ranty.
And, oh, but someday we will talk about that.
Oh, we will, especially since you and I are on complete opposite sides of that debate.
It's like we're talking politics or something. Right. Or Mac or PC.
Yeah. God, how are we friends? I'm not really sure how this all worked out. So we'll get into something else that divides us, gaming. We don't actually have much gaming news here. But some of you might remember about 6 months ago, it might have actually been longer than that, Microsoft announced they were going to put out a new version of their Xbox wireless adapter. This is a USB dongle that you can plug into any Windows PC and allows you to connect Xbox One controllers using the Xbox One wireless proprietary protocol thingy. And it allows you to connect up to 8 controllers to one computer. They've had the original version of the stick available for a couple of years. I've got one. It works great. The only downside to it is it's enormous. It is almost twice as long as a traditional thumbstick. It is 1.5 times as wide, probably, which means if you're plugging this into a laptop or something like that, you're probably blocking the USB port next to it. Like, it's so big, you can't plug something in next to it. And on a laptop where you might be using something like this, you probably don't have many USB ports. So that's kind of a problem.
Right.
So this one is 66% smaller. It's basically the size of a normal thumb drive, flash drive type USB stick. And it's finally available. It took them forever to make this thing available. As far as I can tell, it's only available on the Microsoft Store. And by that, I mean MicrosoftStore.com, not the stupid app on your Windows PC. It's $25. The one thing that I noticed is when the first stick came out, they made a big deal out of the fact that it's not just controllers. It's not just that it supports 8 controllers on one computer. It also supports headsets through those controllers. So what it said was 8 controllers plus 4 chat headsets and 2 stereo headsets. I mean, it's weird numbers. Like, I don't know how they ended up there, but the description on the Microsoft Store site only talks about controllers. It doesn't talk about headsets anymore, but it seems like it has to still support headsets. But the listing on the Microsoft Store site doesn't even look like it's done. Like, this Amazon Music listing looks more complete for an app that isn't even available than the Microsoft Store listing for this product that you can buy right now. So I don't know what's going on there. It's probably exactly the same functionality, but we don't know for sure. There is one difference, though. So I guess it's not exactly the same. This one says that it only works with Windows 10. And the previous one worked on Windows 7 and Windows 8 PCs. So if your gaming rig was still running Windows 7, you could use one of these to use Xbox One controllers. Well, if you buy this new one, it's only going to work with Windows 10 for some reason. Maybe just because Windows 7 isn't technically supported anymore.
Yeah, but that seems really weird. I mean, what a strange thing, unless there's some sort of hardware driver that is specifically only compatible with Windows 10.
Maybe, but it seems like the same device, just smaller.
Yeah, I don't get it.
I don't get it either. But it's available. If you've been holding out for one that wasn't so enormous, you can now get one. So let's move on to the deals with gold for the week. A lot of games on sale, including some recently released ones like Destiny 2, Call of Duty World War II, NBA 2K18. They're all on sale. It's not massively on sale. Those are all available for $39. But there's also some other interesting games worth checking out, and they're discounted even more. Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time. This is one of my favorite titles for a game on this platform. This is a fun couch co-op game. It's up to four people. 2D side-scroller where you're all controlling different aspects of a spaceship and trying to move it through the levels. Like, one person moves it. One person controls a gun at the top. One person controls a gun at the back. And there's one person controls shields and which direction the shields are facing and stuff. It's a lot of fun. It's a really fun game to play with friends who are all in the same room with you. So that is only $7.50.
And we've talked about that in the past, haven't we?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it's been on sale before. So if you haven't picked it up yet, go and do that because it's really fun. Another game that is definitely been on sale before, but if you still haven't played it, and especially if you're a fan of story players, get this game. It's called Firewatch. It's only $8, which is more than half off. This is another one of those walking simulator type games. But this is a little bit longer than some of the ones that we've played. A lot of the games that we've played recently for story players have been like 2 hours, maybe 3 hours. Firewatch was at least 4 hours for me, I think. And it's beautiful. Like, it's just walking around out in the woods for a lot of it. And that's in like Colorado or something like that, somewhere out west in the mountains. It's an enjoyable experience just to walk around in the woods. It's cool, but it's also got a really interesting story and definitely worth $8. And then another one that we've mentioned before, this is another one that's fun with a group of friends sitting on the same couch, and that is Overcooked. This game is now down to $5.61. And that's up to four people doing crazy cooking challenges, and it is a lot of fun. It is like, coworkers and me played this a ton over lunch breaks because it's just a ton of fun. You have to play through all the levels. It's just great. So go and check that out if you haven't yet.
So is that like a particular percentage off or something? Because what a strange price.
It's got to be, right? I mean, all of these are based on percentages.
$5.61. That's like a classic Kmart price.
It is 67% off.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. And then a quick reminder on games with gold. These are the ones that are free as long as you have an Xbox Live Gold subscription. You'll probably only have a few hours left to get Zombie for Xbox One, or Split Second is the Xbox 360 game that's free for the first half of the month. But you've got the rest of the month to pick up Shadow Warrior on Xbox One. And you'll be getting February 16th through March 15th, Assassin's Creed Chronicles India. This is one of the side-scroller Assassin's Creed games. This is not one of the big, huge AAA, third-person adventure games. And then for the second half of the month on Xbox 360, your game is Crazy Taxi. So, again, last time we talked about that, I had heard this isn't a great version of this game, so maybe not, but they're free, so whatever.
So they'll be on my hard drive.
Right. So that does it for our news. Before we get into what is going on in our entertainment centers, we would like to remind you, if you're not already subscribed to the show, maybe you're a new listener, subscribe. We're in iTunes, we're in Google Play, we're in Pocket Cast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, basically everywhere. If you're not subscribed already, subscribe and tell a friend. That's the most important thing you can do to help us out. Tell a friend and get them to listen to Entertainment 2.0 and send us some feedback and come back for the live show too. All right, that's our only ask of you. Let's move on to what is going on in our entertainment centers.
All right, and for some reason, this seems to be everybody's favorite part of the show. I haven't quite figured that out yet, but you know, we love talking about what's going on in our homes, and if you like hearing it, that's awesome. So here we go. In my home, I have been struggling with a problematic control issue, and the issue is that I would go and I would turn my system on, or I would change from one input to another, and it wouldn't do what I wanted it to do. It would sometimes end up on the Apple TV. It would sometimes end up in a state where the TV couldn't tell what the input was, so it was no input. So I'd get this big, nasty no input signal and some beautiful 4K picture, but not what I really wanted to see, because that's just a demo to keep you busy while it figures out what to do. Well, it turns out that my problem... Damn it, this pisses me off. My problem was CEC. My problem was allowing the connected devices to influence what the active input was on the television and on the receiver. And between the television and the receiver, because the two of them had CEC capability, because, you know, that's how it works. And then I had things going into those that had CEC capability, like, for example, my Apple TV, they always mess things up. Whatever I selected wouldn't always come up. So I ended up turning it off. You know what happens when I turn off CEC on my television and my receiver, Josh?
Oh boy. I fear.
I no longer get audio return channel, because CEC is required for audio return channel. So here's why I did this. I needed to fix this problem, because this is not a happy discussion in the Gunther household. So when I use the remote to select a source, it should go to that source. I shouldn't be fighting with some source thinking it's more important than the other ones. So I had to turn off CEC. What that means is that I no longer have audio return channel. What that means is that I can no longer easily use the TV apps on my television to get content to my receiver.
Right.
And we're now at the point, I can say happily, that that doesn't matter anymore, because the Xbox now has HDR and 4K apps. My Apple TV has HDR and 4K apps. And so it's less of an issue than it was when I bought this TV a year ago. A year ago, I didn't have real 4K sources.
Right.
Right? The TV was the 4K source. Now it's not so much of an issue. So it's not really something that I'm going to miss. But it still, to this day, baffles me why ARC and CEC are intertwined as tightly as they are. Mm-hmm. Both on my TV and on the receiver. So I assume there's a technical reason for that. It's not just some arbitrary decision.
Right.
But the good news is that I only have to press my remote button once, and I get both the audio and the video that I want.
Imagine that.
It's crazy. So, yeah, so this is just so frustrating to me that I had to essentially turn off a technology that is designed to specifically make it easier for you to use multiple sources with your video equipment. I mean, it's nuts. It makes no sense. Ugh. Anyway, all right. So I've been watching lots of content, not a ton, but the usual stuff. We're kind of in the off season right now. So we have some season, like mid-season starting up again. Nashville started up again. I've been keeping up with that. in our last episode, I mentioned that there was going to be a special Super Bowl episode of This Is Us. Not only was there that Super Bowl episode, but then there was a follow-on episode that following Tuesday. Great episode pair, really good storytelling, as always with that show. Man, I love that show. And yes, it was tragic, and you find out what happened, and it answered all the questions. Unlike most things where all your questions will finally be answered, they actually delivered. They totally delivered. I was really happy on that. The Amazing Race, as I mentioned, is midstream, and that's been a lot of fun. I've been keeping up with that. Superstore, love that. That is now in a hiatus because that's on NBC, and anything on NBC is basically on vacation while the Olympics are on. More on that in a minute. And I've been watching The Big Bang Theory, and Big Brother Celebrity Edition. Okay, so I have to tell you, I planned on not watching this because Omarosa. I was not going to watch a show because of someone that is on the show that I don't want to give a stage. And then I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand the idea of not knowing what she was going to say. What what beans was she going to spill? And what's interesting is that twice now, stuff that she's talked about on the show have been like primetime news fodder.
Right.
So I think it's really interesting to see what's going on there. And I have to admit, it's actually been a fun show, even though Celebrity Edition, what they really should have called it is like, you know, Big Brother D-List Edition. And I don't even think that it qualifies as D-List, because technically, if Kathy Griffin is D-List, then this is like E or F-List at the best. But whatever. It's fun. And man, it's been crazy. Game of Thrones, of course, because I'm doing the other show about that. You should totally listen to that sometime. We talk about Thrones. It's really interesting. Anyway, and finally, the Olympics are on, and I love the Olympics, and I am doing the Olympics wrong, Josh.
I don't know what doing the Olympics right is, so, well, so please expand.
So before the show, you were asking me if I saw a particular hockey game, and I thought to myself, hockey game? Huh? What are you talking about? No, I did not see this particular hockey game, because I have been, and I know we talk about all these different ways you can consume media and all the different sources. And you know what I've been doing for the Olympics? I've been doing NBC for the Olympics. Do you know what NBC thinks that we all want to see in primetime?
Figure skating?
The only thing anybody in this country apparently cares about is figure skating. And what is up with that? I mean, there's the occasional freestyle snowboard stuff. There's the occasional stuff with like, I think they have highlights from some games, from some hockey games. I did see a bobsled or two, and I did in fact see the opening ceremonies, and that was pretty cool. It wasn't as good as others, but it was really cool, and it was symbolically cool for a couple of reasons. But I don't understand, what is the obsession with figure skating? There are other things going on. I like speed skating. I like cross country. Mm-hmm. I like hockey. There are so many different things that you could watch. But NBC, for some reason, in their primetime showing, is featuring primarily figure skating. So I need to poke around a little bit more to figure out where I can find the things that I really care about. It's not that figure skating's bad. I've come to like it. But it's not why I tune in.
Okay, so I'm going to start with the Olympics. I've also been watching a little bit of the Olympics. And to do that, because I'm a cord cutter, you know, we mentioned on the last episode a bunch of different ways for how you could do that. I went the Hulu route. And
nice.
So I got the Hulu app, and I thought, yeah, there's like Hulu's going to be a no-brainer. They'll have an app on everything.
Oh,
it'll be great.
But you have to use the Hulu app.
Well, right.
I feel bad for you.
So I thought there's definitely a Hulu app on Android TV. So I'll just throw this on the NVIDIA Shield, which is the box I've been telling my family to use for everything, and they have been for the most part. Except that the Android TV version of Hulu doesn't have the new interface. It doesn't have all the live TV stuff. It's still the old app. So, you know, now that my family's been using just the NVIDIA Shield for the last 3 weeks or so, hey guys, go back to using the Xbox if you want to watch the Olympics. So they've been doing that, and that's been working out pretty well for watching the live stuff. Basically, you want to put it on NBC or USA or whatever to watch whatever's in prime time.
So they want to watch the figure skating.
Oh yeah, yeah, they love the figure skating stuff. But they're also interested in the other stuff too. For me, and here's my big recommendation. I obviously care mostly and primarily about hockey. I'm into some of the other stuff, like the snowboarding stuff is cool and bobsled is neat, and I do like speed skating, but I mostly just want to watch hockey. Shocker, I know. Use the NBC Sports app. The NBC Sports app is like, you open that up now, and it does require authentication through a paid TV provider, but Hulu is one of the ones in the list, and they'll give you like what's going on right now and, you know, some of the top highlights and stuff like that. But at the bottom of the app, and this is true on the Xbox, it's true on, you know, basically all of the platforms, across the bottom of the app, it shows just a list of sports. And you pick the sport that you're interested in, and it shows you all of the videos for that sport, live or previously recorded.
Nice.
So on Sunday, I think it was, Sunday morning at like 2 in the morning, was the Team USA women's first hockey game. I wasn't going to get up at 2:30 in the morning to watch it, but I was able to watch it later that day through the NBC Sports app, and it wasn't hard to find. I'm sure it was aired. In fact, I know it was aired later on one of the other NBC channels, because at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I got a message from one of my coworkers. Hey, you watching the women's game? No, I watched it like 4 hours ago, because you can do that now. So use the NBC Sports app. It is the way to go if there are particular sports that you care about. So that's what I would recommend.
That's
I've
cool.
also been messing around with some other stuff. On the gaming side, Square Enix released a mobile version of Final Fantasy 15, and this is kind of insane. Final Fantasy 15 is a massive, massive role-playing game that took the studio 10 years to make. This is a 35-hour plus role-playing game, you know, huge open world, all sorts of side quests. It's an action role-playing game, so you're mashing buttons to fight things and stuff and all that. They made a full mobile port, completely separate, but it's the whole game. It's the full story. It's similar combat, but it all actually works on a phone. And they broke it up into 10 episodes, and the first episode is free, so there's no reason not to check it out on Android and iOS. And it's coming to the Microsoft Store for Windows 10 PCs soon. And I was blown away by it. And I thought, wait a second, as I'm playing this, other people might be interested in seeing what this is like. There's a Mixer app for Android called Mixer Create. So let's give this a try. And Mixer Create is kind of neat. So I plugged in my headphones as I normally would while playing a mobile game and turned on Mixer Create, turned off the camera because the front-facing camera thing on a phone when you're playing a game, not really the best angle when you're holding your phone down below you and looking up at it. Yeah, no one wants a camera pointed up their face, up, you know, at your nose. Not a good plan. So turn off the camera and start playing, and it totally works. It totally streams the game just as you would expect, but it wasn't broadcasting the game sound, and I never figured out how to make that work. There aren't options to disable or enable game sound. The only thing that I can think of is that it doesn't work if you have headphones plugged in, but that's ridiculous. So I want to play around with that a little bit more because I think it is a neat idea. It just wasn't working all that well. For games on, you know, normal platforms, consoles and PCs, started playing through Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice. This is a PC and PlayStation 4 game. I'm playing on PC. This spoilers. This is one we're doing for story players. This is an interesting game. It is an action game that takes place in it's in a setting around Norse mythology, and it's about a woman whose boyfriend, I don't know, they never refer to him as a husband, but he's died and he's in hell, and she promised that she would come back to him. So you are fighting through hell to get to your boyfriend. And it's really interesting, really neat, lots of crazy stuff going on. Oh, plus it's basically about psychosis. So you've got lots of inner voices talking to you the whole time. And that is every bit as creepy and weird as it sounds like it would be. But it's really well done, and I'm very much enjoying the experience. So almost done with that. And then in addition to that, the usual whole lot of NHL 18, and there's a new Overwatch event going on right now for the Lunar New Year. So lots of new skins, a new version of Capture the Flag. So check that out a little bit, and of course loving Overwatch. That game never ceases to be fun. So that is it for what's going on in my entertainment center.
Awesome. And that I think wraps this episode.
It does indeed. So let's give our contact information and get the heck out of here. If you want to find us on Twitter, Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard, and the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I Media Zone. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/thedmz. We've also got other podcasts for you to check out. Richard, you've got Home On, where you cover the latest home automation and control news. What's going on with Home On?
Oh, that's so funny. You're so sly there asking, oh, what's going on there? Oh, right. I was
no
on.
Idea.
I was on recently. Yeah, so with our 100th episode, Josh joins me, and I'm working on editing that now, and that will be the next one out, hopefully within the next couple of days from the time that you're listening to this. So I'm very excited that you were able to join me for that. This has been a crazy, you know, we talked about this on the show, 4.5 years
mm-hmm.
that
Absolutely.
We've been doing this show, close to 5 years, actually, and so much has changed, and we had a really good time talking about all the things that have changed in the home automation, or as we now call it, the smart home space.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I can't wait for other people to get to listen to that episode. We also had Story Players return from its season hiatus. Season 2 of Story Players has started. The most recent episode was released where we played through Virginia, and like I said, we're working on playing the next game now. It is Hellblade. If you want to play that now in anticipation of that next episode coming out at the beginning of March is when that should hit. And then another quick reminder that we stream this show live almost every time we do it, most times, and that is normally Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. We use Mixer to do that, so you can just follow Entertainment 20 on Mixer or head on over to thedigitalmediazone.com to find the live page there. But your best bet to know exactly when it's going to be happening is to just follow us on Twitter, because we always tweet as to when the show will be live. But that's going to do it for episode 439. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.